I just realized Pikachu has like really nice eyebrows. Like really thick, well defined eyebrows.
Boss, man.
Before we get into today's episode, just a quick disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast by either myself or any guests are their personal views and do not represent the views of any associated organization. Nothing in this episode should be construed or relied upon as financial, technical, tax, legal, or other advice. All right, let's jump into the episode. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of ZeroX Research. The BlockWorks research team is back to bring you another analyst roundtable. Today is Monday, March 25th. This episode will be going out on Wednesday, March 27th. And we are joined by Brick and Boccaccio, fresh back from our Digital Asset Summit to jam on the latest market happenings. Kicking it off to myself for a news and governance update. First things first, Polygon ZK EVM mainnet went down due to L1 reorgs. I think this is something that we've seen happened a little more recently, especially with Blobs coming online. I think basically the thesis is that Blobs basically increased the sort of validator like requirements just because they basically do make the blocks bigger. And with that comes a few more extra reorgs. And one of those reorgs resulted in the ZK EVM mainnet going down for, I think it was quite an extended period of time, actually, roughly 10 hours or so. And then just a few other things on sort of like the airdrop point side of things. Airdrify announced points season 2, and it's quite a hefty amount of the entire token supply. It's 5% of the total token supply. And I feel like this is a trend that you're going to see more and more as protocols sort of struggle with how do I keep my users around after the first airdrop. And I guess the natural conclusion is to make the second round of airdrops bigger than the first round. And similarly, Blast has distributed Blast Gold, but they basically distributed this not to users, but to Big Bang winners, which was sort of their ecosystem incubation / hackathon competition, and to various mainnet devs. And I think that's just something that you're going to see more and more. You know, at the end of the day, you need both users and devs. It doesn't make sense that you just completely forget about devs in your whole like airdrop process. So yeah, any thoughts on any of those guys?
I think the Blast one is super interesting. Like, I wouldn't say I'm the heaviest on-chain user ever or whatever, but like the way Blast did it has kind of incentivized me to just go on the chain and like try new things. And I think it was super cool that like, protocols like got some incentives, but then what they decided to do, or if I've understood correctly, is that they just like redistribute them to like their users. So then you get like your kind of per protocol incentives, and like people are incentivized then to use kind of everything that's gotten like points or whatever you want to call them, because like once one project runs out, then people just go to the next one and like try those out. So it's like a great way to introduce the whole ecosystem, and yeah, been super interesting to like try everything out.
Yeah, in the same vein, I saw for the first time rumblings, I guess, of this L2 called Mode, which is built on the OP stack and is kind of like a little bit similar to Base. And they're doing a 5% airdrop of the total supply to early users. And there's different KPI milestones. So I think they just hit 200 mil of TVL. DCF God was actually the one who put this one on my radar, but I find that super interesting too, just because Optimism DeFi is like mids at best, no offense. Like there's just not a ton to do over there. Like I either go to Base or I'm not really using the OP stack much at all. So kind of keeping my eyes out for Blast, like narratives in the OP stack ecosystem.
All right. We got a few other news and governance updates. The first is more on the news side of things. It's Ethos, which is sort of a hybrid between Ethereum and Cosmos. Is sort of like a security coordination layer for Cosmos powered by ETH Security, but they've secured $4.7 billion in stake commitments. And that's broken down as, I think, $2 billion from Edify, $1.2 billion from Renzo Protocol, $1 billion from Puffer, $400 million from Kelp, and $100 million from Swell. And I think you're just going to see more and more news like these come out over the next few weeks or months. For example, I think Lagrange is another quote-unquote ABS that got stake commitments to. And I'm sure there's like a huge amount of BD games happening behind the scenes as all of these ABSs go to all of these different LRTs or restaking protocols and basically say, hey, can you like commit your stake to us? Because, you know, at the end of the day, it's a nice, sexy number to see that your ABS is secured by like billions and billions of like assets. Something else on the governance side of things, Firaxis proposing a fee switch. This goes pretty contrary to what they were doing in the past, especially with sort of the whole real world asset shift. If I'm not wrong, their entire goal was to not turn on a fee switch so that they would accrue sort of protocol revenue and bring FRAX so that it's fully backed again. But this goes completely against that point. And, you know, they have the FRAX or roll-ups. They want to reach some insane amount of TVL by the end of the year and have like also an insane amount of like roll-ups for like layer threes. But basically, there's a lot happening, and I think many would argue probably too much happening there. So that's what's happening on Firaxis front. And lastly, on the DYDX front, the proposal went through to stake 20 million DYDX tokens from the treasury with Stride, which I think is a pretty big win for Stride. Notably, I think, though, DYDX will not be auto-compounding the sort of DYDX or the USDC rewards from staking liquid staking the Stride. Instead, they'll just be keeping sort of like the accrued rewards in the treasury. Whereas for normal liquid DYDX stakers, they would continuously compound the USDC rewards. But yeah, any thoughts on Firaxis, Ethos, or DYDX, guys?
I mean, for Firaxis, I'm not that familiar with the whole ecosystem or the like application itself. But yeah, it seems that they're really announcing a lot of changes all the time and like trying to make things happen. But yeah, I guess the market really isn't, I don't know how to put it, believing them anymore, maybe, because like they introduce all of this stuff and then no reaction ever comes, which maybe is a good indication of like maybe they're focusing on too much or spreading like too thinly. Because I think Near had a similar problem at one point where like they were implementing a lot of stuff and announcing new things, but then a lot of things never materialized or got changed around a lot. And then it's hard to like create a clear picture of what your project or blockchain does. So yeah, I think it's interesting that they're like introducing all of these cool things, but at the same time, so you need to like execute at some point as well to, you know, make things happen.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's really that familiar with Firaxis since they keep launching something new every like 3 days. But I agree with Rick. I mean, it's just they're launching way too much stuff. Even though like I really like the Firaxis team and I love like I would read up a lot on them over like the past year, but now I'm kind of getting tired of it to the point that I feel like they're constantly launching something new. And I don't even think it's necessarily like narrative chasing. I think it's more so just that they don't necessarily know exactly where they want the product to go. And like Brick said, the market doesn't seem to like where they're planning on going. So I hope that they can somehow simplify it. And I mean, like, to be honest, maybe like focus on the L2 instead of the L3s first and then move from there.
Yeah, but I think that's also a good like an indication of a lot of players maybe staking capital through EigenLayer, but not really knowing what's happening or like what the narratives will be. And I think for a lot of people, like now it's just a default that like EigenLayer will drop some kind of a token or through some like AVS, that being EigenDA, like drop a token and then it will do quite well. But my thesis is that like this stuff, let's say in the next 12 months, will be like so much bigger than anybody could imagine. Like it will just be engraved into pretty much everything regarding Ethereum.
Yeah, I agree with Victor. I think you're going to see like similar to like TVL wars, like every ABS is just going to flex this like vanity metric of how much stake commitment they have behind their ABS. And it's just going to be sort of this measuring like a competition. And I think, yeah, like most users have no idea what they are sort of depositing or restaking into. I bet you if I asked like every single EigenLayer depositor out there, 80% of them probably wouldn't know what the acronym ABS stands for. Whether that's a problem, probably. But I also know EigenLayer is like really aware of the situation and sort of like the risk that LRTs present to both like EigenLayer and Ethereum as a whole, as you know, sort of like the quote unquote like leverage that's being introduced through some of these like loop trades. And so, yeah, I think retail will continue. I have no idea what is happening. I do think that there'll be a lot more increased education in the space, either from Iconair themselves or sort of like external third-party contributors. But yeah, I expect it to keep growing though.
Yeah, but also going to say that I feel that a lot of these LRTs are maybe a good addition to the game because many of them will be like trying to optimize how they allocate capital. And a lot of them are like adapting these like optimization models where they're trying to optimize for the best risk reward ratio, which probably is a better way to allocate capital than just having people like randomly throw in stuff into like different operators and AVSs. So I think those are pretty good for the industry overall.
Let me follow up there then, Rick. You say like sort of developing this portfolio based on risk reward ratios. What do you think the risk is and what do you think the reward is? Because for half of these AVSs, they haven't even thought through like the slashing mechanism. You really have no clue what the token rewards are going to look like. So what do you think is like actually being discussed other than like, is your project legit tech during the BD calls?
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna, Gauntlet has at least one good like blog post about this, and they go through like their kind of risk reward model, and it's gonna be based on stuff like perceived risk and I guess historical performance of the AVSs. So to answer your question, like right now, I don't think it's possible because you don't, as you said, like if you don't know the slashing conditions, you can't like optimize the model in the way you should, and it's impossible to say. So I think, yeah, that's actually a good point. Like a lot of people maybe don't realize that the first, I don't know, a few weeks will be the riskiest for when a new like AVS launches because you simply don't have any historical data to go off. And also like one maybe big factor that people don't really think about is that like it's impossible to really define the risk or like you kind of have to, you know, estimate something and like to be able to, I guess, put it into a model. So yeah, you can't be perfect with it, but I'd still argue that it's much better than just like randomly picking out AVSs or like securing as many as you can with your capital.
I've got a dumb question for you guys too. So if you went to withdraw what you deposited in Eigenlayer, let's say you deposited Steeth and they unwrap it, when you go to withdraw that, can you just withdraw it in ETH or are you withdrawing it in Steeth? Like, I'm just trying to think through, because I've been saying since the beginning, I just see the main risk here being the peg of these LRTs to the underlying ETH, given how many layers of leverage you kind of have on top. And I could see that being a problem where they depeg 20, 30, 40 cents off the dollar. So what does that process look like? Like, are you actually withdrawing Steeth no matter what, or do you get out ETH? Like,
yeah, you withdraw the liquid token, the liquid stake token. So if you do stake deep, you withdraw stake deep. But it takes 7 days. It's not like can I just have it now? It's like block to block. So I don't know how many blocks exactly, but when I withdrew, it was 7 days.
Okay, I think there's some differences between how like projects implement this, but at least a few I've looked at is like you deposit Steeth into the LRT project and then the project itself like goes and unstakes the Steeth like you would normally do. So then you just have, you're holding basically ETH and then you first stake that natively and then restake it through Eigenlayer and then the LRT project just like gives you back their LRT derivative.
Yeah. We have different answers on that question, then I'm pretty sure retail has no clue what they're going to get back when they eventually withdraw to you. But all right, we're going to move on to a quick word from Squid, thanks to our fantastic sponsor, DYDX. All right, guys, for this week's DYDX segment, we have Vig, co-founder from Squid Burgo. Thanks for coming on, Vig.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
All right, I'm going to dive right into it. I feel like I'm seeing Squid Valder more and more lately when interacting with various DApp front ends. Can you explain what Squid Valder is and how Axodar fits in, perhaps, as a starting point?
Yeah, sure. So Squid is a cross-chain swap protocol. We let you get any asset on one chain to any asset on another in under 20 seconds. And this all starts with Axler, which is a think of it like an internet for blockchains. It's a network which connects every blockchain. Has really nice decentralized way of doing it. It has 75 validators and they verify messages between chains. Once you have Axelar's network, you can build applications on top of it. We thought the most useful application would be to allow you to have any asset in your wallet on any chain and interact with any application in one click. Because we think the superpower of crypto is that you can have really strong ownership. Like DYDX is a perfect example of this. They build an exchange that instead of a centralized exchange where, say, FTX owns your money or doesn't own your money as it turned out, you own your money and you can verify it. So people are really focusing on this ownership side of crypto. But the other superpower of crypto is interoperability, where you have an application and value that's associated with that application, and you can use it in, you can plug it into any other application, like seamlessly. And this is a big lift up from the traditional finance world, say, where you have maybe some value in Argentina where I am right now, and you wouldn't be able to use that in Australia. So we want to have all value across the world, like instantly be able to exchange or communicate with other products and like buy products. People can transact, AI agents can transact. This is a future we want. And so what we thought we needed was a one-click way of using this value in any application. And Squid then lets you swap value into something that the application might recognize. And then also in DYDX's case, for example, we deposit that value into an account and you can start trading using the application. And yeah, we've done about $1.2 billion of spot volume in the last year, partnered with a few hundred protocols right now, connecting 65 chains, I think.
Yeah, that's super helpful context. So how specifically is SquidRouter related to DYDX? I've seen Squid integrations across a lot of different perps dexes. So I'd also be interested to hear, like, what is your expansion strategy? Like, how do you decide which dApps you want to plug into with SquidRouter?
Yeah, DYDX is the perfect example of our use case, because they built an entire app chain just for their use. But it was difficult for users, say on Ethereum, to get the ETH onto the exchange to not start trading on DYDX. And we're helping them we swap on, say, Uniswap, bridge via Axelar, swap on Osmosis, bridge via IBC. All these things the user would have had to previously do themselves to get onto DYDX. We do it for them in one click. And that problem happens to be basically there for every application in crypto. Because we have all these different rollups and chains around the place, any application is usually limited to having users just on the chain that they exist on, like users of Ethereum or users of Arbitrum, users of the Cosmos. And we're a really easy sell because we come to basically any applicational protocol and we can say, you can increase your total addressable market to basically everyone in crypto. So the people, our expansion strategy is really with everyone. I mean, we focused on DeFi to start with, like we focused on DEXs and we're partnered with most DEXs around crypto on the chain that we support. And then derivatives DEXs were the next one. Use case there is depositing margin into your account from any chain. We're also working in NFTs, so you can buy an NFT on any chain with any token in one click, this sort of Stripe-like checkout experience. Lending, gaming, we're working with everyone. It's a really nice open world that we get to work in.
Nice. That's super interesting. And I'd love to see you guys sort of plastered across my timeline saying, like, Squid always powers these really seamless experiences. I guess last question that's slightly out there. Would you by any chance have any token alpha for some of our listeners?
I can't confirm the existence or non-existence of a token. But I can, that the users, like the community, should get involved with our Discord and Twitter. And we're really proud of making everything fun. So we'll be coming out with some fun experiences soon, which everyone should engage with.
One more quick question too. I know we only have like another minute here, but I noticed that there's V1 and V2. Do you mind diving into like what exactly the difference is between V1 and V2 of SquidRouter?
Yeah, totally. So V2 is still in beta and is going to be releasing pretty soon. It's a huge upgrade in how the routing works. So originally Squid was purely, you would route by USDC. You'd always bridge USDC, swap. And it was fairly limited in number of, say the number of hops you do. With DYDX, it's a special case where we actually go from Ethereum to Osmosis to Noble to DYDX. And it's like this really complex transaction, which we package, but we built that specifically for them. And this is, V2 is super generic. So we're expecting this world where there's potentially thousands of chains and rollups, and everyone has their own rollup for their application. There's tons of scaling happening. And we needed something which was going to connect everything in one click. So it's really a technical upgrade so that we can support those things like L3s, all these OP stack things that are coming. We've got rollups in Celestia. Like, you will need to bridge multiple times probably. And so we're doing that. And it's also going to be way faster. Needs to be super snappy. Like, go, you get a quote, swap, get your assets in 10 seconds, 2 seconds even. So yeah, that's what we're just focusing on. Like, now we've hit the use case really nicely and we're just leveling up the technical prowess.
Awesome. Well, we will have to get you on sometime for a full episode, Fig, but thank you so much for coming on. We will see you hopefully in the future.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on.
All right, guys. Now moving on to our hot seat cruise drone segment. This week, I'm going to shoot it over to Brick first, who's going to give us a DAS roundup from Blockworks' very own Digital Asset Summit.
Yes, sir. So went to DAS last week. Was a super great experience. Unsurprisingly, like, most of the people you talk to are quite euphoric right now and still believe that the market has more space to run. But also, like, I guess a big difference with other conferences I've been to is that, like, at DAS you had more people who were super focused on the intersection between TradFi and crypto, and then also more like focused on the how the like crypto markets are structured, what I mean by that is like, oh, how is money flowing and like where's volume going and things like that. And it wasn't, of course, there were some super tech focused people also, but not as much as the other conferences I've been to. And it was pretty, I don't know, refreshing or like cool to see also people who aren't as like, you know, just tech focused people and kind of being in the industry without maybe knowing every single detail that's happening underneath. And actually, a lot of people I talked to said that they don't even trade crypto that much on their like individual accounts, which was quite a big surprise to me. So that kind of signals to me that the industry is here to stay, because now you start getting more and more people who are here to like do it as a day job instead of like trying to make it big with or through trading. Then another takeaway would be that big banks are still like definitely playing around in the field, and like they're gonna implement that like their own structures. Talked to a lot of different people who said that like they're working on in their banks like internal divisions for like crypto payments, or like trying to implement some kind of a structure where the bank's customers themselves can like have a native kind of way to get access to crypto. But then, yeah, that got me thinking that that might lead to maybe some kind of fragmentation, or like you will still have some kind of a TradFi factor even when like the banks come on chain, because everybody won't be like using the same systems. And I'm not sure how they're probably gonna be well connected through some like technology way, but still, like, it's not gonna be as, you know, idealistic as within crypto, where like everything basically can be connected. Then when it comes to some VCs I talked to, it seems that like the private markets have quite quickly followed what's happening in the public, and everyone's kind of expecting that, yeah, as I said earlier, that everything will run up. So like even like private rounds have gotten more expensive, and it's now harder than ever to kind of get into these private rounds. And that's how projects are able to like raise so much money. And a few VCs even said that they're not gonna like invest that heavily anymore, because they feel that the market's overheating and they just want to take a like super long perspective, so they're gonna wait for like the next opportunity. Then also talk to some debt people, and their biggest concern was like, yeah, we already have some institutions here who do deals and like use these products, but it's still super small, which is why like the market is pretty inefficient from time to time. And like few big pain points there are that there aren't enough like TradFi like products yet. So like, or like these derivatives, like interest rate swaps or like more complemented debt products. Or of course they also exist to a certain degree, but it's like you can't access that capital or you can't access those projects yet as an institution. And yeah, interest rates are sometimes, or that's why interest rates sometimes are like out of, or you, they could basically be arbitraged if you wanted to, but it's also like hard to close these differences because like it's so hard to like access some of these parts of the market. I don't know if that made any sense, but yeah. And then maybe my last point would be something that Effort Capital has been talking about since we came back from DAS as well, is that meme coins are like a super hot narrative still. Like you would have some super big institutions or like regulatory people even talking about, I don't know, Bonk or Weef or whatever. And I think that's a big signal that like meme coins really have a lot of like, not, I don't want to say staying power, but mind share maybe is the better word. Yeah, it was pretty funny to hear like people in suits talking about meme coins. I don't know if Boccaccio wants to add anything.
Yeah. About the meme coins. I don't know if you guys remember, but Slurf launched that morning, that like I think the first morning or the second morning that we were at DAS. And I remember like by midday I was like overhearing people in suits talking about it. But I mean, like Slurf was pretty big because it pumped, and then also the dev was crying on Spaces. So it was like it got really popular really quickly. But it was still kind of like a culture, like a shock, like Rick said, to hear like people talk about meme coins. And like even on the panels, they were talking about meme coins and stuff. So I agree that it's definitely like here to stay. Apart from that, I think the only thing that I really noticed is, and this is something that I think about a lot, is like when these guys come in, what like interest do they have in crypto? Like how much interest they have in crypto? And from what I saw is like the, I don't know, like the higher ups, the big guys, they like understand crypto, but they're like, oh, Ethereum's like a little bit exotic, like et cetera, et cetera. But then like their analysts are like really, really in the trenches, and they like, they know everything and they're very like interested in everything. So like those were the guys that would often talk about Slurf. So it was like, that was kind of interesting to me because I think on CT you hear a lot about like, oh, how like banks are going to come in, but they don't like, that, or like the suits are going to come in, but they don't necessarily know about it. And I don't think that's true. Maybe that was true last cycle, but now like these people are obviously like in the space on their free time. And like, also they understand it a lot better than we might imagine.
I think there's a lot to break down there. I really like Vic's point about how these people probably just do it as their day job rather than punting on PAs at home. I think that's a very good sign, actually, because it means that these people are likely here and thinking about how to incorporate blockchain technology into their jobs, their companies, rather than just thinking about like the financial and speculative nature of crypto, which is what is really focused on right now, to be honest. And definitely agree on the meme coins. I think like there's a degenerate inside every person. And I guess that came out in full force during Digital Asset Summit. Private market valuations, I think we've all seen that it's gotten pretty crazy in the past few months. You've seen these large raises, whether that's like Espresso, Elixir, Eclipse, and I mean like Eigenlayer's like $100 million raise from like a single VC. Like that's probably like one of the largest like signs of like, I'm not sure whether you say like private markets are overheating, but if you're like an investor at this point, you're probably thinking that there's probably better risk return just from investing in liquid markets or secondaries rather than private markets. And totally agree on the debt market front, right? I think we've seen like the early innings of like people thinking about like RWAs on chain, whether that's just like tokenized treasury or actual, like, for example, credit pools such as like Maple or Goldfinch. But like in the grand scheme of those markets, it's still really, really small. Like private credit in TradFi's hobby, like, I don't have a number, but I'll say like hundreds of billions, whereas in crypto it's probably like 1 billion max. And I think there's still a lot of operational processes, sort of like counterparty risk, like legal risk, like what contracts do you sign, what entity are you interacting with, is it a DAO, the protocol, or sort of like a offshore entity, that crypto's still figuring out. But I do expect crypto to figure it out sooner or later. But it's just super exciting to hear that, you know, the institutions, whether that's like super TradFi institutions or super crypto native institutions, that are here and there are at least actively interested in this industry rather than just completely writing it off. And I can imagine a large part of that was due to the ETF approval back in January.
Yeah, definitely agree there. But I find the inflated private round valuations to be kind of surprising, because I have DeFi Llama pulled up right now and I'm looking at the raises tab. We topped in October of 2021 at $7.1 billion raised during that month alone. And today, you see during February, there was $800 million. So we're looking at like an order of magnitude less in private round fundings amounts. And I don't know, it's just like, you'd think that this gets a whole lot crazier before people are passing on private round deals. But it's tough to really diagnose, because obviously there's a bit of a lag between private money raised and public markets trading.
Yeah, that's a good point. And actually, when you think about it, like when I said that the private market is overheating, I meant more like valuations are going up, and not like the amount of capital raised itself. But that's a super good point, because like, interesting that if a lot of, or some VCs are already feeling that they're paying a lot to get, just get in, or like high, the valuations are high, and compared to like the last cycle, we still aren't like seeing as much money raised in total. Maybe that means that some players are never coming back, or like we will never see as much of a, you know, craze going on in the private markets as we saw in the last cycle. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it could be timing too. Like, we obviously had that March 2020 huge dip. It was the middle of COVID. So maybe that funding kind of got pushed back further in the cycle. And this time it feels a little bit scarier to, you know, make a private investment, because you think, all right, I got a 1 year cliff after the token launches. That could be in 6 to 12 months. I'm going to be waiting here for 2 years and Bitcoin's already at all time highs. Like, that feels like kind of a shitty deal at this point in the cycle. So maybe it's just apples to oranges comparison.
I think there's also another thing that would be interesting to look at. So one is like sort of deployment, right? Sam, you put that number of 8 billion in February 2021 versus like 800 million in the current month. That's one aspect. The other aspect would be how much are people raising for their funds? Because in 2020, 2021, that got pretty ridiculous. Like, the amount that some like first time like GPs were able to raise for the like crypto funds. Obviously, that was a function of sort of like the low interest rates during the COVID era. And interest rates are at a very different place right now from where they were like 2 or 3 years ago. So it'll be interesting to see whether these funds are able to do these like mega raises again, or that they're not able to do these mega raises. Because I think the top was like A16Z announcing they're like, in total, they raised like $4.5 billion across their like four crypto funds last cycle. And I don't think you see something of that order of magnitude this cycle again, just because of a different like market environment. But it'll still be something to pay attention to.
I think that might also be like a consequence of the fact that I'm guessing last cycle, a lot of funds couldn't really reliably deploy all of the capital they had. Like, then you have to start doing some weird deals and you're like inevitably going to get burned on that stuff. So maybe, I'm just guessing here, but maybe a lot of managers got a bit, you know, wiser on that sector and decided to, you know what, like, I'm just going to raise as much as I think I can reliably deploy and be happy with that.
I don't know. I think it might just be, we just haven't hit that VC FOMO yet where they're like, oh, I have to have crypto investments. We're just not doing a left translated cycle like everybody's saying it is. It's just going to get sillier and sillier, is my take.
I think another factor could also just be AI. like AI was not a thing in the COVID era. Whereas I would guess in the past 1 year, like VCs have FOMO'd and raised for AI funds to an like incredible degree. And you see that in these fundraisers and these investments. I mean, like today it was announced that FTX was selling 2/3 of this Anthropic, of the Anthropic stake for like $800 million or something, which means that there's someone else on the other side buying their stake at whatever valuation Anthropic's trading at. And so, yeah, I think that's probably another reason.
I think there's a lot of like high net worth individuals too, who previously maybe would throw a $100K check to, you know, this friend of a friend who's in crypto and starting a VC fund. But now it's like, okay, you can just buy Bitcoin ETFs in a portfolio in your, you know, regular brokerage account. So I don't know. I see both sides. I could see the Boccaccio. We just haven't seen that VC FOMO yet. Or I could also see like there's simply just more avenues to invest and you no longer need to maybe put those checks into like a more private allocator fund, but it'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, the thing is, for me, VC almost always seems like a forced buyer to an extent, because they have all this money they have to deploy. So I'm almost wondering if it's like, if it's just not that time yet where they have to start, like they haven't, we're still, I don't want to say it because it's a bit of a meme, but I'm wondering if we're still relatively early in the cycle that they haven't had to like raise those funds and be like, oh, like I have to deploy this as well. And that's when you see, like, because you see this with like not just fund, like VC funds, but also like chains where they're like, oh, like I have X amount of money, I have to throw it into some form of like program, some form of incentive thing. It's like that FOMO. That's what I think. It's like they're kind of like forced to deploy, and it's just not that time yet.
All right, I think that's a good segue into my hot seat this week. I've got TradFi dunkers on the ETF outflows last week. I'm actually stealing this from a tweet from Feijiao, so be sure to give him a follow. He is a great account. He's been nailing the macro side of things. But last week, we saw $900 million of net outflows from Bitcoin spot ETFs, and some folks have been kind of cheering on X/Twitter about how the most recent run-up was basically driven by unsustainable demand for Bitcoin ETFs. But as Feijiao likely or rightly pointed out, like what they kind of failed to realize is $2 billion of the net or of outflows were from GBTC, and no one on CT really understands how the Genesis bankruptcy proceedings are actually going. So that could be related potentially. And this also came during a week when a lot of people were very unsure how the FOMC meetings last week were going to go. And it wound up going pretty darn well. The FOMC turned out to be pretty positive, with language from Powell signifying QT tapering, cuts through the end of the year, like 1, 2, maybe 3. So yeah, generally positive language from Powell, despite the more than hot inflation numbers we've been getting as of late. And today's Monday, the 25th, as we've said a few times, and the Coinbase premium returned, which is historically signified spot ETF inflows. So we'll see if that correlation holds up. But GBTC is down to about $20 billion of AUM. And you have like macro guys like Joseph Wang, who used to work at the Fed, who I personally follow pretty closely for macro signal, if you will. And he thinks that the global cutting cycle is just now starting. And he's predicting like positive price action across risk on asset classes. So pair that with the halving in, you know, less than a month, there's definitely a lot to be bullish about. But again, we keep talking about meme coins, like that does typically signify froth in the market. So this is just like a tough market to navigate, honestly. And it feels like everyone every other day is like gone schizo on us. And like one day everyone's bullish, one day everyone's bearish. And there's been some pretty crazy sentiment swings. So I guess just spot and chill is the takeaway, because it's just a hard market to try and time, if you will. And I think you're probably better off just holding the bags you have conviction in. Like Brick always says, time in the market, not timing the market.
Yeah, I definitely agree with what a lot Sam said. I mean, as much as I would like to see 500 million in net inflows every day and Bitcoin just grind up 3% like day after day after day, I don't think that's a realistic scenario. At some point, it had to slow down or even go negative. So call this like inflow consolidation or whatever you want. The market does need to take a breather from time to time. I do think that one interesting thing that I feel like I've noticed, at least in the past like few weeks or months, is that CT is like flipping like bullish and bearish a lot more frequent than last cycle. It feels like last cycle, it would at least take like maybe like 1 or 2 weeks before, like people just went like turbo, like turbo bear. But this cycle, and especially the past few weeks, it feels like that's happening like every few days. I don't know what to make of that. To be honest, I'm not going to pretend to like understand like CT, like social sentiment analysis, but that's just something to pay attention to. And I'm also not going to pretend to like know my macro stuff, but I don't know. The M4MC seemed pretty positive too.
I don't know. To me, it seems that each cycle, like people are saying that, oh, this cycle we're flip-flopping much more, like market sentiment is changing. But I just feel that there might be, I don't know what to call it, recency bias, where like, at least to me, last cycle, I remember the same thing happening because I was just kind of getting more used to Twitter and like getting more on there, and I would do my own stuff trading on the side and then hop on Twitter and I'm like, yesterday everybody was super bullish. Now everybody flipped. Like, what's happening here? I don't get this mindset, because I'm definitely not like a short-term trader. And I'm seeing it this cycle as well. So I feel that that's always happening. And that's, I don't know why I can't do that day trading thing, or like where you flip-flop every day. You like pick a side, or pick, you're either bullish or bearish, and then you go with that for the next few months. That's my pro tip.
Yeah, it's also interesting just on the Bitcoin ETF flows, is that every other ETF had inflows every single day net other than Grayscale. So it's literally just Grayscale as the source of sell pressure. And to like the social sentiment seeming a little bit more flippy floppy this cycle than last, as you were saying, Ren, I think that'd probably be attributable to the fact that people are more heavily allocated to meme coins that have, you know, 50% intraday moves regularly. So that's what I'd attribute it to personally.
It also might be that now we have like, it's over, we're so back, it's very like memeified. So you're always seeing that and you're kind of always thinking about that as well. But it's definitely, it all, like most likely is because people are facing like 50% downswings on the daily and then they're like, oh, it's over.
It's definitely easier to like flip-flop right now because of the like ETF flows. It's kind of a North Star you can follow, where like, oh, today we had like, I don't know, 10 billion outflows. Maybe not that much, hopefully, but
pause.
Just a few hundred million, like tens of millions, not a few billion.
Yeah, just using an example here. But you know what I mean? Like, it's easier to, you know, start flip-flopping if you see you have a like clear market narrative or like KPI kind of that you're following. So it's easier to like change your mind just based on that, because I guess last cycle a lot of people were thinking about the interest rates, and those of course don't change them often or as violently maybe.
No, I think that's actually a very good point, right? Like last cycle, if you're thinking about like whether you want to feel like positive or negative or like optimistic or pessimistic, like it was hard to find like a metric other than like the price itself. You know, you can't look at like the rainbow chart, like MVRZ or whatever, like those like random metrics, like coin holder days. But this cycle, there's like the net inflows, and that's a really easy metric, you know, like positive number good, negative number bad, and it feels like everyone's like attached themselves to that number as a sentiment indicator.
I'd totally disagree. GBTC was literally the exact same thing last cycle,
like the premium.
Yeah, not even the premium, just like the dollar AUM, like it was the exact same thing. Everyone was posting charts like, oh my gosh, like another 500 million of inflows into GB. Like it's the same exact thing, just re-engineered and now fully regulated.
Sure. I think that's a fair take too. I think that's a good point to move it on to Boccaccio. Who do you have in the hot seat, Kujon, this week?
I have two people, teams in the cool throne this week. I have firstly the Ondo team, who launched Ondo GM a couple weeks, I think last week. Das has like completely ruined my sense of time. So I think it's either last week or the week before. Ondo GM, Ondo Global Markets, aptly named, allows you to trade global tokenized assets, including equities and stocks, which is kind of not what they used to do. They used to only allow USDY, which is a yield-bearing stablecoin, and OUSG, which is tokenized governance debt. Now they've moved on to tokenized stocks and equities, and I'm really happy that they did this, because there's kind of like a lack of tokenized equities and private equities on chain. And I'm not sure if this is like a demand issue or a supply issue. It's probably a demand issue, to be honest. But either way, it's good that they're at least expanding more. And recently, they also did expanded to Sui and Solana, so the high throughput chains. Overall, I've just been like, over the past few months, I've been very excited with Ondo, because even though the real world asset narrative kind of died down, like only naturally because meme coins are pumping and no one really cares about like 7% or like 4% on chain or something. But yeah, I don't think that tokenized equities will become popular this cycle, but I do think that Ondo has that like mandate of heaven for tokenization and real world assets, where it's like the protocol for it. So I'm quite excited to see what they're going to continue to do. And my second one is with the Parallel team and their launch of AI agents in, or their potential launch of AI agents in game in 8 to 11 months, where, so they recently released a white paper for Parallel Colony, which is a AI agent led / based space exploration game, where you basically chat to your AI agent and say, hey, can you build like X, or can you invade Sam's colony today? And then they do it, or they can refuse to do it, or they can say, actually, I don't want to invade Sam's colony, I'd rather invade Ren's colony. But with Parallel Colony, they're also launching Wayfinder, which is the AI agent framework, which I think is the cooler part of their announcement. It's like, basically, it allows AI agents to interact with the blockchain. It's supposedly launching on Solana, although everything is kind of like preemptive at this point because not everything is solidified. It still has a ways to go. But overall, I'm quite excited, and they're meant to emit 45% of the Wayfinder token prompt, which is, the name is undecided, to Prime ecosystem. I don't know how they're going to plan on doing that. From what I've seen on CT, it's supposed to be like a caching system, which is basically you stake your Prime tokens and you earn prompt. But I think we still have to wait, and that's likely going to be like, at least they're saying Q4 this year. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think it's like start of next year. But it's, I mean, this is definitely the coolest on-chain game that I've at least like heard of it over the last few months. Everything else is like Stardew value, but yeah, you need at least 100 grand in investments to get a couple of seats. So this one should do relatively okay.
Kickstarting with Ondo, I do agree that like tokenized treasuries is probably just the largest use case today. But I do think like tokenized equities, and just, I'm not saying like tokenize everything, guys, like definitely like not just like tokenize like every single Airbnb, tokenize like every like house, tokenize every like just random things and put on the blockchain. But at least from like a super mid-core perspective, right? Like if you are trading equities on your stock brokerage today, you can sell your equity. I think it's now T+1 settlement. And then you're going to take another 1 or 2 days to go through like the fiat banking system. And then you need to like transfer to your bank account, and then from your bank account to like your centralized exchange, and then like on-ramp to your centralized exchange. Like that's a pretty decent time that could have been invested in the market. And so just like cutting out those processes by tokenizing equities on chain seems like a good first step. Obviously, there's like probably additional risks and trust assumptions involved, but it does seem like Ondo's going a pretty like damn regulatory route. You know, they're adhering to all of the regulations. They have KYCs, they're registering all of these funds. And I don't think it takes off just because, like, you know, like equities aren't that interesting when compared to like the upside that crypto offers. But in the long term, I think that's kind of the bull case of tokenization, right? Like crypto, and more specifically like blockchain systems or blockchain technology, reduces the settlement time, the friction to like trade between assets, and hopefully one day like offer permissionless access to all of these investment opportunities. Just because in the US it's easy, but in a lot of the other parts of the world, it can still be surprisingly hard to access like US equities, to be honest, like even in developed countries.
Yeah, I got to give a big hat tip just off the rip to whoever the CMO is over at Ondo, because Ondo GM is 10 out of 10 marketing. I love that brand. But I just think back and get PTSD to the days of Mirror getting served at some conference. That was a equity trading platform called Mir in the Terra ecosystem. And then I also think too, Gain's network delisting equities specifically because of the regulatory risk. So I don't know if they're working with like a big fund, like a BlackRock or some sorts to like go through all this or how closely they're working with regulators. But like for me, I don't want to touch it just because of those risks.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I think on though, is the thing is, I don't want to say anything because I don't want to jinx it. But from what I've seen and how they've worked in the past is like they work relatively closely with regulation. Obviously, this is just me inferring. I don't know. I haven't asked them. But like with OUSG and stuff, it was pretty serious. I read over their like docs and stuff and their like notices. And it seemed like they were doing everything the right way. But obviously, as you said, it's like, I also think regulation has cleared up a bit more. Like if you see BlackRock, et cetera, potentially launching stuff on, like they had an Ethereum $100 million fund or something. So it's like, it's kind of easing up. So I think it should be better, but you still never know. So I get what you mean. And it's also like, kind of, you like you never know. You like, things could change in a month. That's what the SEC is doing, so.
Yeah, my takeaway with both of these themes is that like if you have a good product and then execute well on the like BD front, the market will take notice into you. Especially with, I'd say, Ondo, because although I haven't like done very deep research into it, I always see that, or I'm guessing I'm not the only one in the market who's like not being super into like this vertical, but then when they like launch a new product or like somehow advertise it, they always seem to like make a perfect job out of it. And I guess the token launch event was also done in a way that like basically, you know, got the market's attention and nothing super bad has happened. Maybe on the contrary, the token has done quite well. So yeah, my takeaway is just that like if you have a good product and you're able to advertise it, you're right now gonna do very well in crypto.
Yeah, I think that's the power of sort of like marketing yourself and somehow becoming the category leader. I think when most people think RWA these days, they just think Ondo. At least I like don't really think of anything else. And there's a lesson to be learned in there for like marketing and trying to become the category leader. I don't think there's like a defined playbook for it, but definitely like something that most protocols should be trying to do. And then moving on to the sort of like the prime parallel side of things, Vakacho, did you say that they're going to launch in 8 to 11 months, or did I hear that wrongly?
Whatever quarter four is okay. Early, but I don't think it's going to launch in quarter four. Like, because usually with these games, I love the like the parallel team and I think they're like great. But like realistically, usually with products, you got to give like teams plus four minus, not minus four, plus four. So I think they'll likely take their time. But I think it makes sense as the AI agent game. So
yeah, I mean, that seems pretty far out. I would be worried that by the time they launch, to be honest, like kind of the fun is over and the market's kind of died a little, but I don't know, fingers crossed. Hopefully they ship it in time. I do think that AI agents like X Gaming is really interesting. Obviously there's that like one super famous paper that came out from Stanford of like multiple AI agents interacting in this like Stardew Valley type world. And I think that paper captured a lot of people's attention, and Parallel seems to be sort of like the leading team that's trying to implement this into gameplay. It's so hard for me to envision like it. There's like two scenarios. Like one is like really bearish, like the AI agents like don't work, like they just keep on like not listening to you. You ask them to like go build something, they're like, no, I'm kind of tired, I don't want to build it. And you're gonna be like, what is this? I'm trying to get you to do shit, you know. But then the other is like the obvious boot case, you know. It's just like really fun, seamless experience. You have these like hilarious, interesting interactions, and you know, even if this game doesn't work out, I do think like overall long term is going to be a really interesting trend to pay attention to. I wouldn't be too surprised if 5 years down the road, as sad as it sounds, like kids have this like sort of like friend buddy in a game that they like just constantly interact with, and like it's just completely powered by AI agents, and that's sort of like their only outlet for everything right, sorry, this is getting a bit depressing, but basically I do think that there's a lot of like day-to-day like AI interactions, AI agent interactions that people will have in the future.
Yeah, that made me really sad, Ren. But the first thing is my bear scenarios was like, because with ChatGPT and stuff, sometimes you have to beg it to do something for you. You're like, hey, please do this. Like, I'll give you a reward or something, because or else it just gets lazy and doesn't do anything. So I'm worried that it's going to be the same thing with the AI agents. But my biggest worry is that it's just going to be like interesting for like a month and that's it. Like, if I was parallel, that would be my worry, because I feel like for strategy games and like colony games, you want to be like as like in control as possible. Like, I want to do things my way, be it role playing or be it like min maxing, being as efficient as possible. And like at the end of the day, I don't know if me saying to an AI agent to do something that way is gonna do it for me. But yeah, that's my like big worry, is that it's not gonna be that much fun after a month.
I'm such a mid-curver on this. I see ChatGPT is useful, don't get me wrong, but like I'm not using it every single day. And like they founded that company in 2015, you know, like that was 9 years ago. So now you're telling me that there's going to be on-chain AI agents interacting with the blockchain and doing all these huge new use cases that are super underexplored, and it's only an 8 to 11 month development time frame. Like that doesn't sound right to me.
Yeah, but do you remember that like first AI generated video? It's like Will Smith eating spaghetti and it looks like horrible, and like versus the recent AI generated videos and it just looks like an actual movie. So like these things grow super exponentially. So I mean, there's definitely like a risk that it's just not as good as it should be in 8 to 12 months. I just think like it's getting very, very fast to the point that I think it's going to get a bit scary next year. Hopefully not as like scary as what Ren described with my children having to speak to an AI avatar all the time, but it will get scary. So we're going to see how everything works out.
Yeah, I just hope, or it would be super cool if they get it implemented by that time. And then I would imagine that going back to the point of you having to like beg the AI agent to like do something for you or whatever, like one would hope that you could change the friction of, or maybe the frequency or how like negative the AI agent is, you know what I mean? So that if a player wants to like be able to, you know, have a super smooth, no like uphill battles to do within the game experience, then you can just like draw the friction down. Because to me, this kind of seems like a super big possibility of creating something like, I don't know, Sims on steroids. And just like simple games with that use an AI agent that give you like so many more possibilities for the player, I mean, to do stuff. And that's like a big unlock, I feel like.
But that's my question. If you're a player playing a game, what is the difference between playing Sims and playing this new parallel colony, Wayfinder, whatever it's called, game? It's like, to the user, you don't even understand. Like, it feels like you're interacting with a hard-coded bot that's making random decisions based on a random number generator. Like, it doesn't actually do anything for the user.
Okay, so I think I need to give a bit more context here. So each agent has its own archetype. From what I've understood, and based on the white paper, it has its own archetype. So if I own, let's say, Avatar 75, and I give it certain prompts, and I play with it for like 6 months, it has its own archetype, but it also develops its own memories with me. So it has its own like ways that it understands instructions, prompts, histories, memories, its experience, relationships. And when I sell that one to Brick, it keeps those, like it's embedded in the token ID. So that's like the benefit versus with Sims, where it's like, and also, I mean, I don't know, like Sam, I don't know how to convince you of that, because it's like, to me, it's so clear that it's like completely different to Sims. And you're like, what if it's like Sims? I don't know. It could be. I'm not sure. But like, it's supposed to not be. It's like ChatGPT versus Google. What ChatGPT is like Google, technically, if you just Google stuff. But it's like also like quite different, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, this conversation for the listeners is deeply rooted on our morning calls every morning at 9:32. I've been a bit of an AI naysayer, and it's likely because I don't have any bags. So I'm excited to see Boccaccio retire in 1.5 years off of his AI colony agent.
You're just too old to get it.
27, man. That's like 40 in crypto terms. So yeah, you're probably right. But who else do we have left for the hot seat, Cool Threads? Ren, I think it's just you.
I got my last hot seat, but I'll make this fairly quick. So I got Base in the hot seat. Last week, they ran into some pretty crazy fees. So post 4844, I think most rollups saw a pretty significant decrease in transaction fees. Most of them were seeing sub 1 cent fees credit due. But then Base went super crazy due to increased demand for transactions and I guess block space. And their median gas fee spiked up to more than $1.5, which is probably higher than where it was pre-4844. But yeah, I think this happened for a few reasons. The lower fees likely resulted in this increase in demand, and also just like Base season kind of really kicked off last week with Degen, Farcasa, all of these like meme coins. And for context, there was just one day where Base did a whopping $1.57 million in transaction fees, and they paid only $5,000 to post data to Ethereum in comparison to the other L2s, which I think probably made like less than six figs in transaction fees a day. Like it was really, really crazy that day. But yeah, a lot of users were basically paying ridiculous amounts of transaction fees, and Coinbase Wallet also has a thing where that once you send a transaction, you aren't able to replace the same transaction with the same nonce with a higher transaction fee. So you're kind of just left waiting for transaction fees to come down and your transaction to eventually go through. So Jesse from the Base team and a lot of other people on Twitter were super cognizant of this issue. And it basically boils down to that we've sort of scaled the DA side partially. And now we're running into this like problem of execution, because the L2 execution fee was the component that was really high. So Base is working on a few things. Right now, their gas target is relatively low. It's around 2.5 M gas per second. And Base is basically at its current target capacity, which it can support. And that's kind of determined basically by its node infrastructure and sequencer. You can't jack that up without juicing up sort of like the sequencer node infrastructure requirements. So they're doing some load testing right now. But I think what they're saying is that they can really easily raise the Base gas target by 2 to 3 times. And then long term, they really want to do a whole host of different things, right? So you're seeing like parallel pathing work. I'm not really sure what that means, to be honest. But hopefully that helps them achieve a medium term goal of 400xing the gas limit. But obviously that comes with higher DA posting costs, and I don't know what medium term is. For clarity, it could be like 2 years, it could be 10 years. But yeah, and there's also other things to consider, right? If you're increasing throughput, it leads to a faster rate of state growth, and it's still early days, right? I think the EVM has historically been a relatively constrained execution environment, and that's kind of showed for at least only for one day for Base. And you know, you're seeing all of these like EVM compatible parallel execution blockchains, whether that's like say Monad or an L2 that such as like Eclipse that uses the SVM. But I think one question that I'm interested to see is like, obviously like something will always be the bottleneck, but what will be the bottleneck after execution? And would it go back to like DA? Would it go back to something else? Would it just go back to, for example, like shared like hardware can't deal with whatever you want to expect from a blockchain? I don't have a complete take on how to move on from here, other than just like increasing gas limits, make the blocks bigger in the short term. But it'll be interesting to see how L2 sort of tackle this, especially if they want to eventually have a decentralized sequencer set that doesn't have like insanely high hardware requirements.
Yeah, the only thing I would add here is I think Base should be in the Cool Throne, honestly. not a hot seat. Like, yes, like unfortunately the EVM's like constraints and in terms of execution and transaction fees is on the hot seat, but at the end of the day, it's pretty crazy how quickly activity over there is growing and that there's actual demand from people to go over there and try some stuff. And I know a lot of people have been shilling Friend Tech because they were on there early, they own a lot of keys and points are coming, and there's a lot of funny memes around it. So that's something that's a catalyst. And then you've got Degen and other meme coins definitely like exploding today. Hopefully that lasts through Wednesday when this airs. But you see the TVL grow from, you know, 0 to 1 billion. It took a very long amount of time. I see you have this written down here, Ren. It was 203 days. And then to get from 1 billion to 2, it was only 23 days, which is just mind-boggling growth, to be honest. So definitely a big fan of Base.
Yeah, I agree. It's like, this is a good problem to have versus like, if your chain goes down and people don't realize it for 10 hours, like, it's, this is like what you want, is like people complaining that its fees are too high. But I Westy might get really upset with me, but I feel like it'll be DA costs next if they fix this. It will be the issue, because from what I understand, with my limited understanding of Ethereum, is that next, like, what they implemented, 4844, is good for DA, but it's not like, it doesn't actually do anything. It's just like the precursor to doing stuff. And then in 2 years, they're going to do dank sharding, which is when you actually fix DA costs. So, yeah.
But yeah, to echo what Sam said, I don't think Base should be in the hot seat. Probably just maybe like the EVM should be in the hot seat. Base has been on an absolute fire. I think Jesse has been quite literally relentless, right? That guy is like just a force by his own. And the amount that he's contributed to the growth and development of that ecosystem is just tremendous, right? This guy is in the Telegram chats. This guy's in the Discords. He's just like on a complete insane like BD and ecosystem growth grind, and it's been really, really impressive to watch like the amount of work that he's done in order to building out Base. And sure, like a lot of it is speculative right now, you know, you have all of these meme coins, but one, like the culture he's built up, I mean, like meme coin aping is still culture at the end of the day. It's pretty impressive. And two, I do think that you are gonna see a relatively sort of surprising amount of actually interesting apps, whether interesting in the sense of like it's a new use case, or interesting in the sense of like it's a use case that actually makes sense for like the 7 billion human beings out there rather than like the 100,000 on-chain users today. So I mean, all the best, Base. I really hope they sort of make this like Coinbase's L2 like vision play out, right? Especially considering they have 114 million verified users.
Yeah, I mean, for me the main takeaway is still that we're kind of lucky that crypto hasn't grown from a user perspective, like a 1,000,000x or 100x or whatever, like a huge amount, because you could just not, or we're not ready for that kind of a demand increase yet, which we likely will be at some point. But right now, I'm quite happy where like the amount of usage is. And I think a lot of people don't realize that when they're out there on Twitter yelling that there's no real use case, we don't have enough users yet, but the users right now are just super different from what you're seeing like TradFi markets or whatever other vertical. And yeah, I'm quite happy with like how things are looking right now, so just give infrastructure maybe a bit more time to like get up to speed, and then let's look again what happens.
Yeah, you don't want 10 million users on the blockchain right now. I think you have like a 0.1% success rate in landing your transaction in like 1 hour. It'll be just completely broken. But I think that's a good point to close out for this week. So, Vic Boccaccio, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
See you guys.